Welcome to another edition of the Health First Show. I'm your host, Dave Fuller, and we got a great show lined up for you today, starting with Brad King. And we're going to be talking about his latest book, Dirty Diets, Exposing the Dietary Lies That Keep You From Looking and Feeling Your Best. Before we do that, here is Reg with the health news.
Shorter, darker days can trigger a type of depression known as seasonal affective disorder. People affected by seasonal affective disorder, also called SAD, may feel overly tired, lack motivation, and even have trouble getting out of bed. In extreme cases, SAD can lead to suicide. Dr. Angelo Hilaris, a professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neurosciences at Loyola University Chicago Stitch School of Medicine, says seasonal affective disorder affects up to 5% of the population. SAD season starts in October and lasts until the middle of April, but Dr. Hilaris says there are strategies that help combat the symptoms. Spend at least 30 minutes a day outside, keep your home well lit, exercise for 30 minutes daily, and supplement with vitamin D. A new study suggests not getting the right amount of sleep might raise your risk of ulcerative colitis. Researchers report those who sleep less or more than the recommended 7 to 8 hours per night may be more prone to developing the chronic condition, which causes inflammation in the intestines. The study's authors concluded duration and quality of sleep are key factors to be considered among patients with inflammatory bowel diseases. The study, published recently in the journal Clinical Gastroenterology and Hepatology, included women enrolled in the Nurses Health Study 1 in 1976 and the Nurses Health Study 2 in 1989. Every other year, the women completed detailed questionnaires. The researchers note the extended follow-up period allowed them to analyze the link between sleep and disease incidence. Kidney stone patients may be at increased risk for broken bones and may require treatment to protect their bone health, a new study suggests. Researchers at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia analyzed data from nearly 52,000 British kidney stone patients and more than 517,000 people without kidney stones. During a median follow-up of nearly 5 years, kidney stone patients were at significantly higher risk for fractures, and this increased risk affected all bones. Overall, males with kidney stones were 10% more likely to suffer broken bones than those without kidney stones. The risk was highest among male teens. Among women, those with kidney stones had a 17% to 52% increased risk of fractures from their 20s to their 60s, with the highest risk among women aged 30 to 39, according to the study published online October 23rd in the Clinical Journal of the American Society of Nephrology. And finally, researchers report touching cash register receipts can dramatically increase your body's absorption of a potentially dangerous chemical. Researchers say BPA, originally created as an estrogen supplement, has been linked to developmental problems in infants and children, and cancer, obesity, diabetes, and heart disease in adults. The chemical is found in products ranging from plastic water bottles and food can linings. It is also used as a print developer and thermal paper for airline tickets and store and ATM receipts. Because BPA is an endocrine disruptor, the health risks to humans are considerable, the researchers contend, adding commonly used skincare products appear to boost the absorption rate of BPA. For the study, published October 22nd in the online journal PLOS ONE, the research team had people touch cash register receipts after using a hand sanitizer. The researchers then took blood and urine samples to determine their results.
Well, our first guest is Brad King. He's been on the show numerous times and is one of Canada's leading experts when it comes to health around the body. Brad, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave. Thanks so much for having me back again.
Brad, you know, you've written a number of books, and your latest book, Dirty Diet, Exposing the Dietary Lies to Keep You From Looking and Feeling Your Best. Why did you write this book, and why is it that people really should, you know, pick it up and read it? What's different about it?
there's a heck of a lot different about it, Dave. You know, I was one of the first researchers to really expel a lot of the lies that were, that were being brought onto society. This is going back about 13 years ago. I wrote a book then called Fat Wars, which became an international bestseller. I amassed a pretty big following from that book, and a lot of questions ensued from that. People, you know, following the program, people wanting to know more about it, just because there's so so much misinformation that comes out in the industry. I mean, let's face it, there's probably a new so-called diet book that's being written almost every other week. What I did was I was really delving into the research behind these foods that we've been embracing as, the foods that are going to get us past this obesity epidemic. And those are really the no-fat, the low-fat, the light food, spelled L-I-T-E. Dirty Diets is really a book about the science of fat loss as opposed to weight loss, because we're so entrained to think about the amount of fat we have on our body as extra weight, but very few of us really differentiate what that weight is or where that weight comes from, which is why when people go on whatever program they're presently on, and one third of women and a quarter of men are on these ridiculous programs we call fad diets, because they're short-term solutions to what we know is a lifelong problem. But people don't differentiate where weight should be coming from. They just say, hey, I want to lose weight, or I need to drop a certain amount of pounds. And people really don't understand that we actually have good weight on our bodies, and that's our lean body mass, which really controls our metabolism. And the only bad weight is the excess fat, which is very toxic to our system. It creates a lot of inflammatory signals that create things like pain when we have something like arthritis. A lot of that is caused by excess fat or the wrong types of fat within our cells. At the same time, what we're doing is we're embracing these foods that we think are going to help get us through this, and they're only making us fatter. So I wanted people to understand that, you know, it's not just about how fat you are, it's about what can you do to mobilize that stuff that we call fat, and what can you do to make it an energy source for the body. And that's what Dirty Diets is all about. It's about creating energy out of fat, because we're designed to use our fat stores for 70 to 75% of the energy that propels us through the day. Unfortunately, because we're doing the wrong things and sending the wrong hormonal messages to the body, which are conducive to storing fat as opposed to getting at that fat, we're just getting worse off for our efforts. So we think we're doing the right thing when we embrace the diet industry, but in essence, what we're doing is we're creating a nation of smaller fat people because of it.
Brad, if I was, let's say, 10, 20 pounds overweight, what would I do to, what are the key things that I need to consider when I want to lose weight, and what would you suggest?
Don't even consider a diet, because once again, the diet is short term. It's something to get you through a sticking point. And I understand that we might not like the way we look, because we live in a very cosmetically driven society. I mean, you just have to look at the magazines, you have to look at the beautiful stars on television and on movies, and that's what we want. We want to be like people we're not. We want to be like those movie stars or those models, or men want to be like a mini Arnold Schwarzenegger. And our genes don't always want to play along. I mean, whatever we have to work with, obviously. And for someone who would be 20, 30, 40, 50 pounds overweight, yeah, they may wake up in the morning, look at themselves in the mirror and say, ooh, I don't like how I look anymore. I want this gone yesterday. But they don't really realize how long it took to accumulate that degree of obesity. It didn't just take a week, didn't just take a month. It took months and years to accumulate, so it's not going to be gone yesterday. That's not the way the human body works. What we want to do is we need to educate the body to let go of that fat. And what happens with a lot of people within North America, because we've been sending these wrong messages to our fat cells for so long, because we've been eating the wrong way, what ends up happening is when we go on these diets, we send even more of these messages, and we fool the brain into thinking there's a famine. And if there's a famine, the body's going to hold on to fat even harder than it did before, and it's going to let go of other tissues that you do not want to get rid of, and those are things like lean body mass. So number one, I would say get rid of the dieting. Number two, I would do some form of weight-bearing activity. That's weight training or resistance band exercising. And I would do that because that's going to be your insurance policy to allowing yourself to rev up your metabolism to become more efficient at burning fat for the future. And then what I would do is I would read a book like Dirty Diets so that I would learn what foods are creating the problem in the first place and what foods are going to send the right messages to the body that are going to allow my body to relax and let go of the excess fat, because that's what's missing. We're not sending the messages that are relaxing the body and saying, hey, it's okay to actually use this fat. There's enough of it. Let's use it as energy.
Brad, you know, you talked a little bit about toxins, and how toxic are our thoughts when it comes to retaining weight?
Well, our thoughts control absolutely everything. You know, Bruce Lipton is a great researcher that really brought about this whole new area of research called epigenetics, something that controls even the way our genes behave. And, you know, we're so led to believe that, you know, whatever we've been dealt, we're born with a certain amount of genes, and we're born with the genes that have been passed on from our parents. And that's just the way it is. If you have obese parents, you're probably going to be an obese adult yourself, and we believe this. And what the research is showing is we can change a lot of this. Your genes really only control maybe at most 25% of the overall outcome of disease, so whether it's cancer or obesity or diabetes, but also they control the health aspects as well. So the majority, at least 75%, is in our favor, and our genes are really templates, and we build these unique life experiences upon those templates because of our dietary choices, because of our lifestyle factors. You know, we know it's wrong if we sit on our behinds and watch television all day. We know we should be moving our bodies more, but do we do it? We know we shouldn't be eating fast food every day, but, you know, do we eat the right foods? The majority of the time, not. And when we talk about environment, because environment really plays a very important role in how our genes behave, and environment is really thoughts as well. It's what do we allow into our lives? Are we positive people? Are we negative people? The research is showing that your belief system controls your overall destiny. So if you're one of these individuals that, you know, you could be on the best dietary protocol ever, but if you truly, within your being, do not believe that you're going to be successful, you probably won't be successful on that program. So your belief system really starts the overall patterning, and then you build your habits around those patterns, and those habits eventually become your destiny.
Brad, you know, you've been working with people for a long time, you know, improving their lives and really making a difference for them. What are some of the tales that you have, stories that you have of people that have made a difference? And I don't need names, but can you give us some examples?
Well, you know, one of the best examples, actually, was a fellow who came up to me at a lecture that I did a couple of years ago in Vancouver. I was a keynote speaker at a Vancouver health show, and we had, I can't even remember how many, but there were hundreds of people in the audience, well over 500. And at the end, they announced that I would be doing this book signing, and so it was on obesity, the topic. I was doing this book signing. There was about roughly 200 people lined up, and, you know, and I'm just signing this book, but I noticed this fellow who was standing at the very back of the line, and he wasn't actually even in the line. He was kind of to the side, and he looked like he was in shape. He had a big smile on his face. He looked really healthy, and he actually had my first book in his hand, which was Fat Wars, and I noticed it because it was tattered. Like, this thing was used. You could see, you know, the little yellow post-it notes in it, and he had taken notes and everything, and he waited over an hour for me to finish signing all these books, and then he stepped up to me, and he put his hand out, and he said, "Mr. King, I'd like to shake your hand." And I said, "What do I owe this to?" And he said, "Well, I've been one of these guys that has been to probably five or six of your lectures." And I said, oh, that's fantastic. Thanks very much for coming back. He said, but I was also one of these guys who never did anything about what I learned in your lectures. So you would motivate me. I would say, wow, that makes a lot of sense. I would buy your books. I would read them, but I wouldn't apply any of the information. I got really overweight. I was over 50 pounds overweight. I was actually a type 2 diabetic, and he said, you know, every year would come by, and I would see you were coming to town, and I would go and see you. I would get motivated, and I would never apply any of it. And then he said he had this child a couple of years ago, his first baby, this little boy. He said he loved this little boy more than his own life. And what ended up happening was he brought this child to a park one day with his next door neighbor. They were having coffee, and they got into a conversation. Before they knew it, some time had passed, and all of a sudden they heard this lady scream, and they looked up, and their children were gone. And it turned out that their kids had ran away across the street, and there was a truck coming, and there was a lady in a window across the street in an apartment building who was yelling because this truck was coming so fast, and the kid was in the middle of the road. And the guy took off to save his child, obviously, ran as fast as he could, and what ended up happening was he said he hit the ground about 100 feet before he could get to his child because he cramped up. He was so out of shape, he couldn't breathe, and he said the next thing he saw was his neighbor running past him, picking up his child and running across the street. And he said that was the moment when I realized I was ashamed that I got, you know, allowed myself to get into that horrible a shape, but I realized that this was the moment I needed to change my life. If it wasn't for me, it was going to be for this child that I love even more than my life. And he said, and then I applied all the information that I had ever learned from you, and here I am. I'm 50 pounds lighter. I'm no longer on medication. I'm a healthy father, and I'm about to have another child. And I thought, that is probably the best testimony I could ever have to somebody that is willing to apply information. Unfortunately,
Brad, that's an awesome
willing to wait too long.
Brad, that's an awesome story. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to find out more about, you know, how you can really inspire people to live a better life.